Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grok Radio. The following broadcast is made possible by the friends and partners of CYI Worldwide Ministries and Grok Radio. And the views expressed in this program and by our guests may not necessarily reflect those of CYI Worldwide Ministries or its staff. And now, enjoy the show.
You stand on the shore of the ocean watching the tide come in. You sense the call of the sea beckoning to take you in further. You step forward little by little, not knowing what to expect, but expecting more. You keep going as the ocean calls you to enter in to deeper waters.
Hello everyone, it's Nick Peters here, live from Corryton, Tennessee for the Deeper Waters podcast. Little disappointing news for you all, Michael Patton was scheduled to be our guest. He's from Credo House. He's had a jaw lockup. He can't talk at all today. I don't know, there might be some people who might think that's good news, but in all seriousness, we do hope that he will recover. He definitely does want to come back on here sometime, I'm sure, and do an interview with us. I tell you, Michael is a great guy. I joke, man, but as far as I'm concerned, he's the real deal. And I'm really looking forward to having him come back on here sometime. So, that means today I got 2 hours to fill just talking about things I'm interested in related to Christian apologetics. And, of course, I can also take your questions as well. And if you have a question that you really want to ask, get my input on and such, please call in. Our number is 714-242-5180. First story I'd like to take you to today concerns the Texas abortion bill, number HB2. Now, there's an article that's been going around like wildfire on the internet. Because as far as we're concerned, it's finally someone from the side of abortion is admitting the truth. And this one appeared in the Burnt Orange Report. It's by a guy named Ben Sherman. And it's called How Number HB2 Hurts Texas Men Who Like Women. Somehow I think that covers most of them. In fact, I think that covers most men, period. But, like, you just read some of this. I'm going to give you my comments and such. And again, remember, if you want to discuss this, call the number. It's 714-242-5180. Well, anyway, here's what's said. It's a terrible anti-abortion bill. Yeah, you can already tell where this is going. Being considered a Texas legislator during a special session doesn't just hurt women. It also hurts all the men that have women in their lives that they care about. Now, for those who don't know, it's my understanding that this bill is supposed to make it that a woman cannot have an abortion after the 20th week. And we have had cases before with children being born in the 20th week. My former roommate was, in fact, born 2 months early. Not the 20th week, but still early. I think my own mother was a premature baby, in fact. So, what does Ben Sherman go on to say? It's crucial that Texas guys understand how Texas women's bodily autonomy affects them, too. The fight being waged against the bill that would close all but 6 abortion clinics in Texas will only strengthen with more support. And, you know, I really do like that part. This guy is afraid that these laws can be strengthened. Forcing women to adhere to the anti-choice attitudes of state legislators forces men to do the same, and will have serious consequences on both men's and lives and lifestyles. Yeah, that's true. The old way of viewing reproductive rights, yeah, you gotta watch that term, rights, when it shows up. There's so many people want to claim a right that they really don't have. The old way of viewing reproductive rights as a women's issue alone is easier and in some ways encouraged by outdated parts of masculine culture, and it's wrong. When men stand with Texas women against this bill, they are also standing with Texas men. Okay, you know, I would agree, this is not a woman's issue alone. But outdated by parts of masculine culture, I'm kind of really wondering what the guy's talking about exactly. Okay. Now he says, find out below the jump four reasons why Texas guys should oppose number HB2. Okay. Most of us have female friends, mothers. Well, yeah, I would hope most of our mothers are female. I'm not sure what else they could be, but I would certainly hope they're female. Sisters, it'd be kind of nice if those were female, too. Again, I don't know many people who have male sisters, but, I mean, with the way things are going, who knows? Roommates that we care about and who we think know better what to do with their reproductive health than a bunch of legislators. Obviously, we should stand up for them. Maybe, apparently, Mr. Sherman thinks he knows better what some women should do. And, anyway, if we are saying that people in the government don't know better what to do with our bodies, and I say, you know what? That's a great idea. Let's throw out Roe v. Wade, then, since that was government push on us. Odds are, you know a woman who has had an abortion, or a man whose partner has had one, or a man whose current girlfriend, I know that, it's girlfriend. It's not wife. It's always assumed it's a girlfriend, did not become a mother before she was ready or suffered serious physical harm from an unsafe illegal abortion. Yeah, there's a bit of trouble with that terminology right there. Any woman who has had an abortion is already a mother. Yeah, she's already a mother. If you were a woman and you gave birth and your child died the day after they were born, you would still be a mother. You'd just be the mother of a child who's already died, unfortunately. The tragedy with abortion is you are still a mother. It is just that you are the one who has killed your own children. And I don't say this because I want to inflict guilt on people, because, you know, there are a lot of women out there who are listening, I'm sure, who have had abortions and have confessed and repented. God bless you. If you've confessed to Christ and asked forgiveness, you are forgiven. But you already know the wrong that was done, and you have to accept it. But we pray for a healing of Christ in your life. Going on. They may not talk about their personal stories, but we may need to remember that 1 in 3 American women will have an abortion during her reproductive years. I'm honestly afraid at that point that statistic is much higher in reality. This could be just for women who talk about having an abortion. I suspect there are many, many more who are out there having abortions. And those pregnancies, Dan, happen all on their own. Correct. It takes two to tango. For those of us guys who like girls, you know, like them. I'm pretty sure I know what he's saying, but again, I find the language of like to be a bit odd. I don't like my wife. I love her. I mean, I do like her, of course, but like is too small a word to use. But for those guys who like girls and want to have relationships with them that may last anywhere from a few minutes to many years. Okay, women, honest question. How many of you out there are interested in a relationship with a guy that will last a few minutes? Can you really call that a relationship? In fact, a guy can get back with a prostitute. In fact, you might want to ask if you're being treated like a prostitute. But here's what he says. We need to think about how this bill, by curtailing the bodily autonomy and sexual freedom of women, hurts us too. Okay, sexual freedom. That is an interesting term. we have a big hang-up on freedom in our country. Now, some of you are saying, are you knocking freedom? Not at all. Freedom is a great thing. But we don't stop to ask, what is freedom? You know what the greatest freedom is? Being free from the things that keep us from being what we were meant to be. We have so many issues that hold us back in our lives from really, really living. Most of us, if we look in the mirror and we're honest with ourselves, we know what our struggles are. And we know that those struggles are keeping us from enjoying the life that God wants us to enjoy. Let's get this part straight. God is not against you enjoying your life. Not for a second. If he did not want you to enjoy your life, he would not have made so many things so enjoyable. G.K. Chesterton said this years ago. You know, the world could have run just fine in black and white. It's loaded with colors. We have to eat to survive. Food didn't have to taste good for us to survive. And the human race has to reproduce if it's going to last. But that activity didn't have to be so enjoyable. See, God is not opposed to our pleasure. He's opposed to us having pleasure on our terms. Reality is, when we seek pleasure on our terms instead of his, we get less pleasure in the end. His way is meant for us to have the greatest pleasure, and that includes in marriage. We need to stand with women, Ben Shett says, in their fight to control their own bodies. Well, you know, the thing is, it's not your own body that's at stake. If we're right on the pro-life side, there's a baby whose life is at stake. That baby has a body that is distinct from his mother's. That baby has a different set of DNA in him than every other cell in that woman's body. That baby, left alone, will grow into a fully developed human being. That baby's already a human being fully. It'll just be even more developed. Now, if this was just some sort of lump and such, like a cancerous tumor and such, we wouldn't have any problems. But our problem is, what's at stake? As far as we're concerned, another human life is at stake. So, here's where, here's the reasons that Ben says this will hurt straight Texas men. Okay? Your girlfriend's wife's life will be in danger. Well, at least finally we have a mention of a wife. Okay? That's something good at least. He says, making abortion inaccessible for millions of Texas women is going to put them in danger if they ever need to terminate a pregnancy. You know, I'm not really sure we can ever speak about that as a need. The only exception could be if a mother's life is in danger, and I don't think any doctor would really say, well, she's going to die, so that's that. I think most of them would encourage it then. And in fact, I think most pro-life people would even say it's acceptable then. Okay? So, believe it or not, convenience is not a need. Needing to advance a career is not a need. Wanting to be autonomous is not a need. You know, I think in this battle, we need to state some things that when a woman wants to have an abortion, generally, we think it is for good reasons. Okay? I mean, some will say, I'm not financially ready yet. Many of us will say financial stability is a good thing. I certainly think it is. Many of them would say, I don't have a father with me who's willing to raise this child. Okay? We'd agree that having a father around is good for the child. I need to finish college. We agree it's good for a woman to get a college education. We are not saying the ends that are desired are not good. By and large, we think many ends desired can be good. We are saying the means to get to those ends are very, very bad. Okay. And that's what we need to keep in mind here. We have to ask, why would you want to terminate a pregnancy? If the action is wrong, what is there on the other end that you think could justify this action? And if the action is wrong, I'll tell you what's on the other end that could justify it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. There is no justification for doing a wrong act. Now, some of you think, hey, wait, you're a Christian. Don't you believe in justification? Absolutely. I believe in the justification of sinners. I don't believe in the justification of sin. Sinners can be justified. Sin never can be. Black markets for unsafe abortions will emerge, says Ben, and women will be pushed into potentially fatal back alley abortions. That's your girlfriend's, yep, there it is again, your girlfriend's life we're talking about. Okay, first off, it's been known for quite a while that this whole thing about thousands of back alley pregnant abortions and such, it's a myth. So statistics just did not add up. But you know, this is a threat that can be made. Second, this is what we call an appeal to consequences, saying, if you do this, then women will respond by doing this. Well, here's another way I think women can respond. Keep your pants on and wait until they get married. That's a wonderful way to respond. And then when you're in that marriage relationship, plan out proper procedures so that you can have children when and if you want them. It's called responsibility. That's a word that's not very popular with our culture today, but it's one that certainly needs to be learned, because ultimately, all this is really saying is that people want the right to be irresponsible. And some of my friends were saying, why can't women just see it? This is just a guy who wants to sleep around and doesn't want to have any of the consequences when doing it. And sadly, I think that assessment is entirely correct. That we live in a culture where men want to have a lot of privileges, but they don't want the responsibilities that come with those privileges. And you really can't have one without the other. And you women out there, you need to realize it. You are a privilege. And don't settle for anything less. Because what we're getting to ultimately with this is women in many ways control the market. If sex is the commodity that's up, it's women who are controlling it. And you want to know who gets to set the price? The women do. There's not a lot of shortage on the demand side for the men. Men don't really hesitate to demand. But when do things happen? Usually when the woman wants it. So, I mean, women, when you're just going to have to ask, what are you worth? Are you worth dinner? Dinner and a movie? A week? A month? A year? Engagement? Or could we go all the way and maybe say, you're worth marriage? You are so valuable that you will only go to a guy who has proven himself by making a lifetime commitment to you. Not a guy who says, I'm going to make a lifetime commitment, but a guy who's willing to put up and say, you know what? You are worth a lifetime commitment. Well, if he's a good guy, he's not going to be complaining about that. Because we've talked about freedom here in this article some, but lovers, they don't want to be free. They want to be bound. They want to be as close as they can to each other, and they don't want that to ever end. Well, B, Ben has more reasons. We're going to be talking about more of these later on after the break. I am Nick Peters of the Deeper Waters Podcast. My call-in number is 714-242-5180. Welcome your discussions, questions. We'll be back after this break.
It's here, the official Grok Radio mobile app. Listen to your favorite Grok Radio programs on your iPhone, iPad, iPod, Kindle Fire, Android smartphones, and tablets. The best thing is, it's absolutely free. Download it now from the iTunes or Google Play App Store, or get a link at our website, cyiworldwide.com. Grok Radio, Christian radio that doesn't suck.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
Hi, I'm Nick Peters. We're back again with the Deeper Waters Podcast. It's just me this week. My guest had the cancer. Be praying for Michael Patton's jaw to recover so he can be talking again. And we hope he'll be able to join us sometime on the show. He's a really good friend of mine, and I really look forward to the day we can have him on here. But right now, we're talking about an article found at burntorangereport.com on number HB2, a Texas law, and how Ben Sherman, the author of this article, is arguing why men should support abortion. Okay, now the first one reason he's given is that your girlfriend's wife's life would be in danger. And I've already said, I don't think that's a likely possibility. Look at this. Next one. Your freedom to choose is at stake, too. While it is ultimately a woman's choice whether to have an abortion, many women choose to make that decision with a man involved. Do you want that decision ready made for you by politicians and state government? Not if you value freedom, you don't. Well, actually, I do value freedom. But freedom is the ability to do that which is good as well. That's the ultimate goal of freedom. The goal of freedom is not, hey, I can do whatever I want. The goal of freedom is society going to enable me to be a good person? A good society is one that enables you to be good. But it also gives you that choice. Do you want to do good or not? Now, when it comes to the laws, the government does have some restrictions. It can do one of three things with a law. Each of them starts with a P. It can promote. See, this is why you can get, for instance, tax benefits when you donate to charities. Because the government wants you to do that. This is why if you get married, you can get tax benefits and such, because the government wants you to bring children into the world, ultimately. It can permit. There are some things that we consider less than ideal, but we don't go after them with full force because we don't want to be like a moral police force entirely. Most of us would say lying isn't good, but unless you're committing perjury, you're not going to take someone to be able to take someone to court because they lied. Most of us would say adultery isn't good. But at the same time, it's not a criminal offense. Okay. Then the other thing that it can do is it can prohibit something. And the government does prohibit many things. And we don't see these as restrictions on our freedom. If my neighbor is playing the music too loud down the street, I don't have a freedom to go murder them. I have a freedom to call the police if I want to, but I can't murder them. If I want my neighbor's car, I don't have a freedom to go over there and steal it. If I do that, they will come after me. I will be arrested by the police eventually. I don't have those kinds of freedom. Freedom, again, does not mean you get to do whatever you want. Many of us see those restrictions, and we don't claim that we're not free because of that. In the same way, we have to ask is abortion good? Yes or no? If no, we certainly don't want to promote it. We might permit it, or we might prohibit it. So we have to ask that by looking further at this situation and say, okay, what happens in abortion? Now, if abortion is the murder of an innocent human life, we're not going to permit that. We shouldn't, at least. We need to prohibit it. And that's something that the government has to take a stance on. And if the government is not going to value the life of the least of us, innocent children in the womb, what life are they going to value? Is so-called sexual freedom really worth the price of killing children? Is it really worth that much? You know, we can look back at Old Testament times and talk about how they did child sacrifice back then. Jerry, they did child sacrifice for the good of a community, at least, you know. And they'd say, well, we have to do this in order to have a good harvest and such. We're even worse than they are. We do child sacrifice just because of the things that we want. Forget about the good of a community. We want our sexual freedom. Okay, let's go forever. You want to decide when and if to have kids. Okay, look, I can go with that at the start. Okay, that's a good decision to have. This bill will force thousands of Texas men into unplanned fatherhood by making it possible for women to access an abortion in the event of an unplanned pregnancy. Even if you want to have kids, you probably don't want an accident to make you a father before you're psychologically ready and able to care for a child. Okay, let me give you a little tip here, okay? If you are not psychologically ready there to have a child, then you don't need to be sleeping around like that. If you are, do something to take some precautions, but don't let this be an excuse. Because, you know, we have a lot of men in this country who are willing to be fathers. We have a lot of boys who are just sleeping around. Maybe you should seek some maturity yourself first. And remember, as soon as that woman is pregnant, you are already a father. Whether you like it or not, you have become a father at that point. The only question is, are you going to have your girl kill your child or not? If you don't want kids, says Ben, you don't want the narrow personal views of politicians and the state government to force you to have them. You got to watch that loaded language. Narrow personal views. Now, in a sense, every view we have is personal. I mean, who else is it going to be held by? And every view is narrow. Every view excludes a view that's contrary to it. We are all narrow in our thinking. Like, try doing something like this sometime. You get a bill, you have to pay. Send in a penny. And then wait for the bill collector to call. You know what they do? Just say, your view is too narrow. You think this is the price? My view says you should be more inclusive and accept what I'm giving you. I might say, fine. We'll accept it. We'll also cut off your cable or your electricity or whatever it is that you're not paying. If you're on a plane, you want your pilot to be very narrow. Do you want him to land in the middle of the interstate, or do you want him to land on the runway? Which do you want? When you send your child to school, you want the teacher to be narrow. You don't want him, that your child to learn 2 plus 2 is 5. You want him to learn 2 plus 2 is 4. You want them to learn about true American history. You don't want them to learn about things that never happened in history. Okay. But all these reasons, the one that gets talked about the most, that Ben says, is this last one. I'm going to read it in its entirety, and oh my gosh, there is so much here to discuss. Your sex life is at stake. Can you think of anything that kills a vibe faster than a woman feeling a back alley abortion? Making abortion essentially inaccessible in Texas will add an anxiety to sex that will drastically undercut its joys. And don't be surprised if casual sex outside of relationships becomes far more difficult to come by. Yeah, I really want that last sentence to sink in again. I want to sink in again so much, I'm going to read it again and listen very closely to this. And don't be surprised if casual sex outside of relationships becomes far more difficult to come by. You know, Ben's just revealed a lot in this. As if the price of sex is not always worth a relationship. It'd be better to have a relationship, or it'd be better to have a sex without the relationship in these cases. And personally, I don't think there is such a thing as casual sex. I think sex will always involve some kind of real relationship taking place, even if it's not intended. Look, you can't just shut off your feelings with something like this. Knock it or not, connections do form between people once a relationship becomes sexual. Yeah, I mean, really, always sexual, okay? I'm not talking about having a kiss on your date or something like that. I'm talking about having full-out sex, okay? I'm sure many of us married guys could attest we loved our women when we married them, those of us who waited for marriage. But after the honeymoon, something very changed about our love. It was on a whole new level then that really I don't think it could have got to without that. That we saw things in a totally different light. And I think it's because we've shared that physical sexual bond with our wives. And that changes things. That makes us want to be out there doing things more. Okay, you women who are listening to this and hearing what this guy is saying, you should be furious. You should be ready to explode at this point. Because what it's being said is, you are not worth a relationship. All that matters is what you can give sexually. See, women, you got to set your price. And you got to set your price high in order to deal with this kind of thing. Because if you do not set your price high, you are lowering your standards, and you are lowering the standards of every single woman around you. Like, I don't even have to bring religion into this. Yeah, my Christian faith does agree with this. But, at the same time, you don't need Christianity to know this. It reveals it, but you don't need it to know it. It's part of natural law. It's part of your normal reasoning. Okay? And when you realize what ability you have, you will get so much better in this world. What will it tell you? If a guy is not willing to commit to you, but wants you to give him all of you, you know, it tells you that he wants your full deal without having to pay the price for it. And you gotta put your foot down and say, no, I'm worth more than that. You know what? If that guy is not willing to pay that price for you, he's not worth it, period. Dump him. Seriously, dump him. Now, if by chance you've been in a relationship and you both have made this mistake and you're avoiding it now, you've repented and you're moving on, okay. You know, in that case, you might want to stick it out. But if a guy's not willing to wait for you, don't be willing to wait for him to change. Put your foot down. Let me tell you, you women, something all we men know, you have so much power at your disposal. It's incredible. With what you do with your guy, you can empower a man so much. But you're not going to empower him if you let yourself be treated like an object. You become just a tool. And when will you be replaced? When a better tool comes along. My wife does artwork, okay? Suppose she gets a paintbrush and she's working on some painting. If she sees a better paintbrush that we can afford, that'll help her out a lot more, chances are we get it, and she wouldn't have any emotional commitment to that other one. She'd just throw it out. And there are a lot of men out there, women, who are willing to treat you the exact same way. Like, this guy is pretty much saying he wants for sex, and if this abortion bill passes, that's going to increase the difficulties of getting sex. Good! Because you know what? That should be a commodity that is most certainly earned. Something that is very worthwhile. So again, women, how much are you worth? And for you guys out there who are listening, this man is your mortal enemy. This man makes those of us who are good, God-fearing, honorable husbands, and let's also say honorable boyfriends who are waiting for marriage, he makes us look bad. Because this guy gives the impression that we men will view women as just objects. And when we're done, we're done, and we can just toss them aside. That's not the way of a Christian. You are in a lifelong commitment when you get married. And you are to stay in that commitment, and you are to honor your wife with everything you have. And a lot of us are losing that idea of commitment. And because of that, women have a harder time trusting men today. And we can't really blame them. In many ways, it's because we've let this happen. We've dropped our guard. Honestly, the church needs to be having much more teaching on this. Robert Gagnon, he's going to be our guest in 3 weeks, wrote the Bible on homosexual practice. He said that a church needs to have a sermon on sexual morality once a month, at least. And I agree. We got to be doing more with our youth. It's like, if you got a young person and they're dating, they're going to be tempted. Okay, don't blame them for that. They should be tempted. It's understanding to be tempted. It's going to happen. When my wife and I were dating, we were tempted. It happens. And if you are going to tell me that you're married now, when you were dating, you had no temptation, I'm going to tell you you're lying. Because that was definitely a part of it. And when our young people get to that temptation spot, they need more than just a few verses in par in order to make the case. Because many of us have a few verses of scripture, and at the same time we know when our emotions kick in and things start going haywire for us, that very quickly overpowers our reason. And I think most of us would quite easily agree, yep, a sexual drive can very quickly overpower someone's reason. So what are we going to give our youth? Are we going to give them just a few verses in par? Or are we going to give them a whole world view on how to think about that? Well, before we go back to this article, Ben, I'd like to talk a little bit more when we come back from a break about what we're going to be giving our youth. But I'm still available for your calls. If you want to say something about this topic, or maybe you got another topic that's on your mind, give me a call. The number is 714-242-5180. All lines are open. We'll be back after this break.
Are you tired of the same old corporate Christian music on the radio?
Check out Music Surge on Grok Radio, playing Christian music that doesn't suck. Download episodes now at CYIWorldwide.com.
Join Army Girl for Christ and Minister Grok as they tackle some of today's pressing issues from a Christian point of view on Truth Be Told, every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, check out CYIWorldwide.com.
Okay, I'm Nick Peters. We're back with the Deeper Waters podcast. You got just me today. Our guest couldn't make it. Pray for his healing again. But the call-in number is 714-242-5180. And I really say that a lot because I'd love to get to hear from you. You know, hear how you're enjoying the show, hear what you'd like to discuss, things of that sort. Your feedback is very much appreciated. And right now, we're talking about an abortion law and an article that was written about it. And I said I wanted to give some more tips on what we can do with our youth. See, when this kind of thing comes up, I think back to a sermon I was at in a church when I was at a college here, you know, in my mid-20s and such, and hearing a sermon for the Silver Ring thing, which is kind of like True Love Waits, if you don't know about it, which could tell you better. Lauren Winter, in her book Naked Sex for Real Truth, about Real Sex for Naked Truth about Chastity, she says that these abstinence programs that we have, generally on their own, they only delay activity by about 18 months. Okay? That's something we need to consider. And that True Love Waits doesn't really mean a lot to you when you're 28 and you're sitting around wondering what it is you're waiting for. It becomes kind of hollow. So anyway, I'm here at this church, and I'm hearing a sermon about the Silver Ring thing. And it's from the associate pastor, and he gets up and he says, "Now, what you young people need to realize is that if you're having sex outside of marriage, you are doing so for selfish reasons." Okay, I agree with that. You know, I honestly don't have a problem with that. I think any time we sin, it is ultimately for selfish reasons. And so, what does he go on to say? Said, here's what you should think about. If you have this outside of marriage, you might get pregnant. You might get an STD. You could have guilt. I'm sure he said you will have guilt. And think about the shame you will have on your wedding night. Now, I'm sitting back here listening to this, and I'm going to say, excuse me, Pastor, those all sound like selfish reasons to me. Because for each of those reasons, it's think about what you will go through. And by the way, we also need to remember we should not make promises that could fall short. Some people, if they do something wrong like that, will have guilt. I don't deny that. Some won't. Some could wake up the next day feeling great. And you know, there's an even greater danger there, because they say, church was lying to me about this. I wonder what else they've been lying about. You want to plant the seeds of doubt in someone's mind? Do something like that, okay? All these reasons given, and they could be just reasons for avoiding it, extra reasons, but there are selfish reasons too. Not the reasons given such as, this is wrong in itself. This does not fit within God's view of sexuality. I will bring shame to my family. I will bring shame to my God. Here are the many reasons why sex was designed to work only within the marital relationship. Those reasons weren't there. And personally, those reasons should be first on the list. And another criticism I had of this message that was given, so little said on positives. there's a joke going around with Red Forest, a minister who says that when he was growing up and being told about sex, he was told two things about it. Number one, sex is dirty. Number two, you should save it for someone you love. We laugh, but that is the message that is given. Dirty and save for someone you love. There's very little said about the positives. What we need to have happen are married couples to come in and be willing to talk about the positives in their marriage. You don't have to give explicit details. No couple should. They should be willing to stand and say, you know, this is the way our sexual relationship affects us as husband and wife. And here's what a difference it makes. You don't have to tell what you're doing exactly in the bedroom. That's between you and your spouse. But you can tell what a difference it's making. In fact, if people are usually watching your marriage, they can tell what a difference it's making. If you have a good, if you're good and strong and happy there, it's going to come out in the marriage. If you're not, that'll also come out. There's a private sphere to sex, definitely. There's a public sphere as well. A private sphere is what you two are doing alone. A public sphere is how that's going to affect you with everyone else. And these need to be stated. At the same time, also, I'm remembering you keep in mind, not everyone's going to get married. Not everyone wants to get married. And we need to tell these people that if that is their choice, if they don't want to get married, they have to be willing to pay the price. The price is they have to stay chaste their whole life. No sex whatsoever. If they're not willing to pay that price, they get married. Those are the only choices in Christianity. You either get married and have sex, or you don't get married and you avoid sex. Not because you think it's wrong, but because you're not in the relationship that it's meant for. We will have to win this battle with our youth. Because we have a message to give them, and the world has a message to give them as well. And the world doesn't hesitate to get its message out on what they think about sexuality, but it's just casual. And we have to say, no, we don't agree with that message, and here's why. And it's not because we're purists, it's not because we're prudes. It's because we see what a good that's being missed here by the world is. That they are taking something good and they are getting it for less. You know, in economics, there's a theory that you can get something that's good, fast, cheap, but not all free. Okay, if you want food and you want it cheap, you want it fast, you'll go for McDonald's. But don't expect it to be good. I mean, it might be alright, I'm not saying it's going to be terrible, but it's not going to be the best. But if you want something good and you want it cheap, don't expect it to be fast. If you want something good and you want it fast, don't expect it to be cheap. But when it comes to sexuality, I want to tell you, don't even think about fast and cheap. Think about good. And if you want it to be good, it won't be fast. You're going to have to wait. If you want it to be good, it won't be cheap. You're going to have to pay for it. But the thing is it a price you're willing to pay? And what you women have to be asking these men every time is, what do you think I'm worth? You know what? You're going to tell them what you think you're worth by how much you respond. There's a story that a man was flying on a plane next to a very attractive woman, and he said, I would like to spend a night of pleasure with you, and I am vastly wealthy. I will pay you $1 million to go to bed with me. woman thinks about it and decides this is a pretty good deal for her. So she takes it. And right before the night, they're discussing plans, arrangements, and such. And he comes out after a while and says, actually, I was lying earlier. I'm not vastly wealthy. I can in no way give you $1,000,000. Will you accept $10 instead? And the woman looks at him indignantly and says, what kind of woman do you think I am? And he says, I believe we've already determined that. We're just haggling over the price. Ouch. That is a powerful story. Women, what's your price? Do you go to the highest bidder? Or do you sell yourself for cheap? What are you worth? So, going back here to Ben's article, and really that last point is just so irritating. This guy's just worried about getting sex instead of anything else, okay? He says, it's clear if a legislature basically takes away a Texas woman's right to choose, having sex becomes a much, much riskier proposition for women and men. Yeah, that's right. You manage, you have to show some responsibility. That is a big risk. And he goes on. It becomes much, much riskier for women who currently count on access to safe, legal abortion because now an accidental pregnancy could mean death or serious infection. It also becomes riskier for us men who may well end up fathers well before we intend. Where, as I've said, you're already fathers at that point. Like it or not, you have become a father. And we can talk about abortion being safe and legal. You can say there, legal does not mean right. And we know this. I mean, heck. The reason we have propositions to change marriage laws in this country is because we think the legal status, at least the left does, thinks that the legal status of marriage is not right. And it needs to be changed to reflect something else. And you know, that's always appealing to a higher authority. That's something we have to realize. If our laws are not grounded in a higher authority in some way, then basically we're just people forcing our opinions on one another. Now, I'm not saying you have to be a Christian to know what the right is or what the good is. But I'm saying that God alone provides the ontological basis for what is good and what is evil. He's first in order of causality, but he's not first in order of knowing. Washington, D.C. has to exist before I can get a map that tells me how to get there. But I have to have a map first in order to know how to get there. And safe, abortion is not safe, at least not in this way. If an abortion is done correctly, there will always be a dead life left behind. Sorry, but I don't consider that safe. And we know when these have been done wrongly, and some resulted in the death of a mother, that's usually very quickly covered up. Almost half of all pregnancies are unplanned and unintended. Of those, over 40% currently end in abortion. What really scares me about that is I think the number is actually probably much higher. I think a lot of women might not want to admit that they've had abortions. There are some women who would tell you that if they work in the medical field, a woman could come to them and tell them they've had an abortion in the past, and they are the only woman to have heard that this person's had an abortion in, say, 20 or 30 years or so. Their husband might not even know. The church doesn't know, and this woman has been carrying around the guilt are alive. Now, like I've said with guilt, some people won't always feel guilt, but a lot of them will. And abortion does have a way of bringing guilt to people. And if they have that, we should realize that. And we should realize that if they're having that kind of guilt, they're likely to not tell someone who asks them in a question, have you had an abortion? Yeah, I've almost like, no, I haven't had one. Yeah, some of them might lie to avoid facing that. Not saying it's right, but I can understand it certainly. Now, being asked this question, what happens to those 40% if this law passes? You know what happens? They have higher chances of being born and being adopted into loving families who want children. And he says, are you willing to roll the dice of your girlfriend's health and safety? Again, there it is, girlfriend. Not wife, girlfriend. There's one more time wife will show up in this article, but overall, it's girlfriend every time. I wonder why that is. You know, that's really something we need to think about. Why are we hearing girlfriend instead of wife so often? Why is it seems tacitly assumed that the person you're in a relationship with is not going to be one you've made a lifelong commitment to? Why? It's a darn good question we need to be asking. So Bing goes on. So my fellow men, listen up. We need to stand with our Texas women in this fight for our sisters, mothers, friends, girlfriends, and wives so that they can have the freedom to control their bodies. I'll see you down at the Capitol. I'll be in Orange. Now, if you read this article on your own, I left comments behind, including a link to a blog I wrote on this article. And one thing I'd said is that Ben Sherman claims to like women. I don't think he does. I really don't. From what I see here, he likes sex. And the woman is the apparatus by which he gets that. If it wasn't for that, he wouldn't have anything to do with him. That's my honest assessment of it. Some of you might recognize those words. They come from C.S. Lewis. Yeah, C.S. Lewis said that we usually speak about men like this and say he needs a woman. C.S. Lewis said, it's just the opposite. If he met a woman, he wouldn't know what to do with her. Yeah. This man, this boy, I should say, doesn't know how a real woman operates. A real woman is going to make him wait. A real woman will say that she has to be earned. A real woman will make him pay if he wants to be with her and say, you know what? If you like this body, if you want this body, you have to give me all of you in a commitment before I give you this. And to be fair, she says, I'll give you that same commitment back. I'll be exclusively yours, and you'll be exclusively mine. But it's not going to happen without that commitment. In fact, that's kind of along the lines of what I had said in this here. And I said to him, Ben, let you know a little secret. There's a way you can get to have sex, and get to have all your life, in fact, and get to have it with someone on a regular basis. It's called marriage. You know what? It works great. It really does. It's a wonderful system God's created. And if we try and seek for privileges without being willing to pay the price, we only hurt ourselves in the end. Well, this has been our first hour, and there's still more to talk about here. I'm Nick P. Peters. This is the Deeper Waters Podcast. We will be back in an hour.
Hey, this is Minister Grock. Thanks for listening. Although Grock Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gifts if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at cyiworldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
Join Army Girl for Christ and Minister Grock as they tackle some of today's pressing issues from a Christian point of view on Truth Be Told. Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, check out cyiworldwide.com.
And I'm Nick Peters. This is the Deeper Waters Podcast. And I'd like to remind you all of the promo we just played that, yes, we are listener supported. We do want your donations. We need them. And I've been fortunate we've had some donations come in this week. I think it's been because of a lot of things I've been blogging about and such that I'm very glad they're starting to hit home. It's blogging, blog defending the minimal facts approach. So that's right now with me. I think this is an issue that definitely needs to be talked about. Anyway, we had Mike Lacona on a couple of weeks ago to talk about the minimal facts, after all. And if you want to donate, there are many ways you can do it. You can make donations for Deeper Waters through Risen Jesus, actually. Just let them know it's for us. You can make donations to the Issues and Answers chapter of Ratio Christi for us. Or you can just go to a blog at deeperwaters.wordpress.com and click the donate button. Downside of that one, not tax deductible. So make your choice. Personally, I think it's best for you to go with one of the first two, but whatever it is, please consider making your donation, and let us know how you like the show. If there are some guests you'd like to see me have on, some topics you'd like to have discussed, let me know. The only way I can know what you want on the show is if you tell me. My number, as it is for to get to the studio, if you want to chat with me about matters, it's 714-242-5180. Okay, so Ben wrote another article after this called 2013 or 1950. He said, it's subtitled, Conservatives Rail Against Having Sex Outside of Marriage. It says this, a full 95% of Americans have sex before getting married, and 93% have sex before the age of 30. 70% of sexually active Americans 21 and under have had a casual sex encounter. In American culture, we've largely come to see that there's absolutely nothing wrong with people making that choice. Well, no, we haven't come to see that. We've come to see that the culture thinks that. But what popular culture is doing is not the same as what's right. Morality is not determined by popular opinion. And when we look at the consequences that we're seeing in our society today, we have to ask, are we really doing the right thing? I mean, is marriage more steady than it was in 1950? Are STDs more prevalent than they were in 1950? Is unplanned pregnancy more prevalent than it was in 1950? Are broken relationships more prevalent than they were in 1950? Do we think we live in a really more moral culture than we did in 1950? Okay. It says, but this reality is clearly lost on or disliked by many conservatives. As he goes on, blatantly misrepresenting my post, and that's the last post we read, many right-wingers have taken to attacking it on Twitter and various blogs. They are up in arms about one of the ways Texas anti-choice bill will affect not only women's lives, but men's as well. In the post, I explain that the bill hurts men by endangering their significant other's life, forcing a decision on couples when they decide together whether to carry a pregnancy to term, and forcing thousands of men into fatherhood when they are not ready or desiring of it. Let's look at that last one. Men are not forced into fatherhood. No one forces you to sleep with a woman. You make that choice. And you should be ready in case things go wrong to accept responsibility for that choice. And abortion is a lazy way to accept responsibility because it involves the killing of a child. The fourth point I made is that it will also significantly affect both women and men's otherwise healthy sex life. This is undeniably true. Not really. Look, if Allie and I lived in Texas, it wouldn't affect ours at all. We'd be just fine. I think it means if you want to be in a relationship where you don't have to have any strings attached and you can just do what you want casually, it will affect your life. Yeah, it will. Which again is just simply an appeal to consequences. The question you have to ask is it right or not? Conservatives are enraged that it would be included as a reason to oppose the bill. Not sure if enraged is a great this term, but you know, I'm actually thankful. I am thankful that Ben wrote this and put it out there and just showed us all what's really going on. You know, this is the kind of statement we've been waiting to hear more often from the abortion lobby, and now we finally have it. As I note in the post, the Republican bill will incentivize dangerous back-alley abortions by taking away almost all access to safe abortion facilities in Texas, which is pretty much a threat. It's what we call argument ad baculum. It's saying, if you do this, we will have back-alley abortions, and you will be responsible for the deaths of all these women. No, we're not. The person responsible is the woman. It's her choice if she wants to take things into her hands because she's unwilling to wait and even do something simple like put a baby up for adoption. It's her choice. This is the same technique that's used on Christians. Say, it's because of behavior like yours, I'm not a Christian. It's a passive-aggressive technique. It's like, no, you're not a Christian because you don't want to be one. If you really cared about truth as it is and wanted to look into it, you would look and see if this is true instead. You're not even willing to do that. And you're using emotion as an excuse. An excuse to blame other people for your actions. Ben goes on. Women will rightfully worry about this danger among the others, as will men. It will instill cruel fear into Texans' sex lives, whether they were in a relationship or not. I think a lot of people in Texas in a relationship aren't going to be staying up at night worrying about this. Again, this is just an appeal to emotion, and it doesn't really work. Okay, here's what he says now. There is nothing wrong with sex or mentioning sex when showing how the spirit affects both women and men's lives. Really, there were some people out there who were saying there was something wrong with sex? I'd really like to know who these people are. You know, I know there were a few out there who are like that, but really, I don't think anyone on the pro-life side is arguing that. Ben, this might be a shock to you, but many people who are pro-life have children. And I'm pretty sure, since you wrote this article, you know where babies come from. I don't think these pro-life men and women are opposed to sex. They're opposed to casual sex. They're opposed to treating it lightly. They're opposed to treating it cheap. Okay, here's what he says. Sex is important to both men and women. Yeah, we agree with that. And he says, and yes, women happily engage in casual sex too. Unfortunately, that's also true. But, you know, a lot of us happily go out and spend money we don't have on many things. A lot of us happily goof off when we should be doing work for college or something of that sort. A lot of us happily disobey the boss when he looks the other way. So what? Doing something happily doesn't mean you're doing it right. He goes on. We deserve to know what this Big Brother bill we're due to endanger women's lives. A Big Brother bear. Yeah, because all the government's interested in is looking into your bedrooms entirely. No, we're not stopping you from doing that. We're just saying, if you're willing to do that, you need to be willing to accept the consequences. It's called responsibility. Some of the government's supposed to promote. He goes on. Hamper free choice. Well, if something's wrong, you should not have the freedom to choose it at times. And if this is murder that we're talking about, then you should not have that freedom. Okay? Force Texans into unplanned parenthood. No, they're not forced. And remember, as I've said several times, as soon as that child is conceived, they are parents. And affect their sex lives. These are not all equally weighted because the first three clearly outweigh the last. But they are all true. I'm not so sure that from the author's perspective. Honestly, I think if push came to shove, we'd find the real concern being pushed is our sex lives are at stake. I'm honestly convinced of that. Republicans have won again the way of American sex lives for a while, he says. Really? We have? And no, I'm a Republican, and I'm in favor of responsibility. That's all I'm saying. Be responsible. If you're going to want to have sex casually, be prepared for those consequences. Man up. Face them. This year they have pushed to defund the family planning services of Planned Parenthood. Yeah. Why? Because we think abortion is murder. It's not because we're anti-sex. We're anti-abortion. Criminalize women getting abortions following a rape for tampering with evidence. I'd still like to see more on that. Recriminalize sodomy. I'd still like to do more of that. And cut sex education funding. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing sex education funding because you know what? It doesn't work. Really, look at what we got going on today. It doesn't work. You want the best sex education for your child? Be a good mother and father. You teach your children this. Don't leave it to the state to do this. You be a mother, and you be a father, and you teach your child properly. And by the way, you show your child properly as well. I'm not saying, again, let them come into a bedroom. When they're older, you make sure they have to know. Mom and dad have to have time together to themselves sometime. That means you all go out to a night sometime at a motel. You do it. Okay? And let your child know, look, you can stay home tonight, you can run the place, we're out having a date night, we'll be back in the morning. Let them handle things. Let them know this is a priority. Last year, conservatives across the country joined Rush Limbaugh in calling a woman named Sandra Fluke a slut and a prostitute for fighting back against her employer's refusal to provide health care coverage for birth control, even for non-preventative purposes. You know, I always wonder about this in culture, because it seems everyone's okay with having sex outside of marriage. But at the same time, if they catch someone sleeping around, they call them a slut. And that's exactly what they're doing as well. Question we have to ask, honestly, is someone sleeping outside of marriage? And if that's what happens, then yeah, that is something that's condemnable. And you have to keep in mind that this is the same party that doesn't hesitate to call us bigots and homophobes and anything else they want. And by the way, let me tell you all also, this is the same party as well that in Texas, the anti-life crowd, the pro-abortion, pro-choice crowd, they were ready to fling jars of urine, jars of feces, anything else at pro-life supporters. You know, it kind of rings hollow if you complain about these kinds of things. Well, those people on your side are doing that. And no, I don't think that the employers should provide a birth control. I don't. You can go out and you can purchase that very easily. You're not going to break the bank that way. Republicans across the country are using sex in a divisive, fearful way to gin up votes from both religious and non-religious voters. We're using this to get votes. Yeah, it's really going to help us in our society, where casual sex is celebrated, to go out and condemn it. It's not. You know why we're doing this? Because we think it's the right thing to do. We think sex is to be honored this way. Ben goes on. This war on sex does nothing but shame women, put them in danger, and hurt families across the country. Ben, do you know how many families across the country have been hurt by casual sex? Do you know how many parents have been hurt by knowing their daughter aborted their grandchild? And let me state something clearly here. You talk about how there's a war on sex going on by Republicans. I would like for you to please show me the Republican man who has declared a war on sex, or a Republican woman for that matter. I don't think you'll find many men out there, especially, who are saying they want to declare a war on sex. I, as a married man, most certainly am not declaring one. If someone wants to have that crusade, you go out there on your own. I'm not standing with you for that battle. Nope. No way. If you want to say, stand with me in the battle to keep it within marriage, I'm right there beside you, 100%. No. No, we are not in a war on sex. We are in a war on cheap sex. Because, unlike you, we think this is something so good that it needs to be used properly. What I've said in comments is that this is like nuclear energy. Okay, nuclear energy works great if you contain it, if you manage it right, if you have it go where it needs to go. It works terrible if you treat it casually, loosely, lightly. It'll explode on you. It'll make a Chernobyl take place. And the power of sex is that way. If you treat it casually, there are results, because this is something that you really can't treat casually without consequences. Every action you do has some sort of consequence to it. And whenever you do anything, you have to ask, am I willing to pay the consequence for this? You have a store. You see an item you want to buy. If you buy the item, you will not be able to buy another item. So you have to ask, am I willing to pay the consequences? If you have that extra piece of dessert, you might have to spend some more time at the gym. You might have to spend more time exercising. You have to ask, am I willing to pay the consequences? If you're not willing to do that extra studying for that paper that's due, you're not willing to really work on writing it well, you could get a lower grade. You have to ask, am I willing to pay the consequences? And if you want to risk sex outside of marriage, you're going to have to ask again, are you ready to pay your consequences? And there are consequences. There are always consequences. And again, some consequences for things can be good. But some of them can be bad. You're just going to have to ask which one it is. Okay. Got about 40 minutes left in the show, so we are going to take another break, and we'll be back.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
Oh, yeah. Hey, folks, it's Will ZPI, and you guys got to check out CYIWorldwide.com, home of the Grok Show. Free MP3s, music, advice, and even prayer support. That again is CYIWorldwide.com. Check it out.
Okay, and we are back. The phone number to the show is 714-242-5180. We've been talking on our show about a couple articles by Ben Sherman in the Burnt Orange Report concerning the Texas abortion bill. And again, I'm still welcoming your calls here. If you want to call in and ask a question or discuss, if you think I'm wrong on this, by all means, feel free to try and convince me otherwise. Good luck. I'm ready for the debate. But let's go back to this article. Despite the paranoid fantasies of anti-choicers, you know, if you're going to tell us about all these horrible things that will happen, don't tell us we're the ones being paranoid, okay? No, he goes on to say, no one wants abortions to take place. And, you know, I want to ask at that point, why do you not want abortions to take place? Why? You know, I want cancer biopsies to take place. I want removals of things that are harmful to our bodies to take place. I want vaccinations to take place. I want surgeries that will correct things to take place. But for some reason, the thing is, no one wants abortions to take place. Well, judging from the reactions of people out there arguing against the pro-lifers, I think it seems pretty sure some people do want them to take place. Let's keep in mind that when the pro-life side was singing Amazing Grace on the streets, the pro-abortion side started chanting Hail Satan. Yep. This is the crowd we are up against. Considering the lengths that we are going to, I think a lot of people do want abortions to take place. And if you don't want them to take place, I'm going to ask you why. And I think you're going to be hard-pressed for some reason until you realize you don't want abortions to take place. The only reason you shouldn't is because it puts a baby to death. The smear that women use abortion as birth control is an attempt to distract from Republicans' efforts to curtail access to birth control or make it economically feasible for women to raise a child. Okay, first off, I think you'd be hard-pressed to deny that a lot of women do use sex abortion as birth control. I don't know how that could possibly be denied. Now, it talks about Republicans' efforts to curtail access to birth control. You know, I think there could be some Catholics out there that might want that. But most Republicans I know aren't wanting to do that. Curtailing, not saying that they'll pay for it for someone else, it's not the same as curtailing access. It's saying, if you want to do this, then you need to be able to pay the price for it. We're not going to pay for you to have casual sex. That's your choice. It goes on, or make it economically feasible for women to raise a child. If you leave a blog regularly, you know I posted a review of Prosperity and Poverty by E. Calvin Beisner. And sometime we're going to have him on again to discuss economics as well. And what? I think every Republican wants things to be economically feasible. In fact, in reality, I think we could say every Democrat would want that too. I don't know many people who say they want people to be unable to survive in the economy at all. And the legislation they pass might show it otherwise in some ways. But I think, by and large, when people want to do things that I consider bad economics, I really think they do have good results in mind. You know, I think when people want to raise a minimum wage, for instance, something I disagree with, they have some good in mind they want to achieve. I don't deny that, but what I deny is, in the end, this won't work. I think some of you who are wanting to learn more about why I think this is the case, Prosperity and Poverty is a good book to read. The late Ron Nash's books on economics, including Poverty and Wealth, excellent books to read. If I could recommend one book on economic theory, it'd be one by Henry Hazlitt called Economics in One Lesson. You learn the one lesson, you can handle economics. If anti-choicers really cared, Ben goes on, about anything other than forcing their own judgments on other people. Okay, so Ben wants to get a law passed that would make his opinion that abortion is legal be the law of the land, that other people would recognize that. But he doesn't want other people to have the right to do the same thing. This is freedom, though. This is what real freedom is. You know, Ben's position isn't right. But that he's out there arguing for his position, that is right. If this is what he really believes, he needs to be out there arguing for it. I do not oppose him being out there to argue it. That is his freedom in our society. I don't oppose a homosexual lobby wanting to go out there and arguing for redefining marriage. That is their freedom in our society. If someone thinks a law is unjust, they should have the freedom to challenge it. Here's how the freedom works, though. I have the freedom to defend it if I think it is just. And every law is forcing a judgment. No law is neutral. Every law is passing some kind of judgment on people. It's causing either promotion, prohibition, or permittance. One of those three. Here's what AOC says he'd do. He says, they'd push to expand access to birth control. Look, and I'm going to tell you how difficult it is to get birth control. What you do, it's very hard. You call a gynecologist. You make an appointment. You go in and see her or him. You tell them what you want. They write a prescription. Look, I know that's difficult. That's hard to think about. But some of us are willing to pay the price. You know, if you're not willing to do that much, you can go to the store and buy several contraceptive things or right up there on the counter. Like, I can take you to our local pharmacies and show you where they're at. They're right there. And if you're having a hard time finding them in Texas, I know some people who live in Texas. I'll be more than happy to contact them and say, hey, there's a guy who's having a hard time finding birth control. Can you help him out? Yeah, I can do that. He says, ensure equal pay for women. You know, I really don't have a problem. I don't know many Republicans who do have a problem with that. Expand Medicaid so that women and families have better health care. Well, we're not against better health care. Again, I'd want to know, what all does this entail? What kind of health care are you talking about? And who's going to get the bill for this? How much is it going to cost? Everything the government spends, it comes from somewhere. It comes from us, mainly. Our tax dollars at work. Strengthen sex education. Really? Do you really think there's something that our youth don't know that they should, that they're only going to get in sex education? Do you really think that's the case? I think most of us know that. Anyways, it seems the youth know more about sex than a lot of the adults do. Which is in many ways a shame. The problem isn't the knowledge. The problem is morality and will. We're not teaching responsibility. That's what needs to be taught. And fun family planning facilities. Like, I'd have no problem with family planning, provided family planning doesn't include abortions. I'm not going to fund abortion. Sorry, but for me, that's murder. And as far as I'm concerned, in reality, that's murder, and I'm not going to support it. All of which would reduce the need for abortions. You know what would most reduce the need for abortions? Responsibility. I know that's a hard word for many of us today, but it's when it needs to be said. It's going to be you taking control and realizing what it means to really be in a relationship with someone of the opposite sex. What all does it entail? He goes on. They can join the Texas Senate Democrats' efforts to do exactly that. Well, so far, a lot of things I've found, I don't think a lot of Republicans might disagree with, but some of them, I'm not going to want to support that. And if this group is willing to support it, I'm going to stand against it. And I am thankful that there are Democrats out there that do stand up against abortion. And if you're one of those, please make your voice heard more. Especially if I was a Democrat, I wouldn't want my party to be seen as being largely in favor of abortion. I really wouldn't want that. Don't know why some people do. Here's what he says. The point of my post was to encourage men to stand up for Texas women. Yeah, I'm standing up for them too. By saying, you have a right to not be treated like an object. You do have that right. And it's time you stood up for yourself also and let the men know in your life, here's what I'm worth. Are you willing to pay the price? And if you're not paying the price, you're not getting the goods. There's a lot of truth to the old adage of why should someone buy a cow if they can get milk for free? Why should they? Women, please, determine your worth. You have the power here. You can do this. In fact, you are the only one who can do this. No one else can make the choice for you about when you're going to be sexually active. You make that choice. And you will say, by your actions, when you have been bought properly. Like I said the first hour, is it going to be dinner? Unfortunately, some women will even sell themselves without having dinner. You don't even have to give them dinner. Is it going to be dinner in a movie? Is it going to be a week? A month? A year? Engagement? Or is it going to be paying the full price and saying, if you want this, you have to marry me? And you know what? If you say that last one, as far as I'm concerned, you are a real woman. And you deserve to be honored. And if a man is not willing to honor you in this way, he is not someone you are going to form a lifelong relationship with. Move on, girl. There are better things that you can be doing. There are better things that you need to be doing. Don't sell yourself for anything less than you are worth. And if you don't think you're worth a lot, you got your own problems you're going to have to work with. The number one way you're going to find out how much you're worth is come to Christ. Be a Christian. The cross should show you how much you're worth. See what else he says here. Most of us have female friends, mothers. Yeah, I think for most of us, our mothers are indeed female. That is a surprising corollary that takes place. Sisters? Yeah, most of us have sisters that are female, too. It's so odd that it's mentioned here. You know, my sister, she does happen to be female. And my former roommate, he's got sister, too, and her sister's a female, too. And another friend of ours had a sister that got married, and she was female. I think there's a correlation I'm noticing here. Roommates that we care about and who we think know better what to do with their reproductive health than a bunch of legislators. And really, I'm not convinced of that. Most teenage girls have a hard time deciding what they're going to wear to school the next day. And we think we're going to let them have the choice on if they're going to put a life to an end or not. Really? How many of you all have teenage daughters that you think are really responsible enough to be making major life choices? A lot of them aren't. Some of you do have children who are. And some of you, I'm sure that if they're not sure what to do, they go and ask their parents for help. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with still seeking wisdom. Like, I still seek wisdom. I turned 33 in 2 months. There are still times I'm calling my folks and saying, hey, what do you think about this? Getting their input. And I wouldn't be surprised if my own in-laws are doing the same thing. These were my parents. Both of their parents on each side are already dead. But my in-laws, my father's father is still alive, and my father-in-law's father is still alive, and my mother-in-law's mother is still alive. And I would be surprised if they're calling them regularly and saying, hey, what do you think about this choice? What do you think? It can happen, you know, because believe it or not, people who have been around for a while, they do have some wisdom, and we need to learn from that. Okay? So, I'm back here. Obviously, we stand up for them, I wrote pro-choice, merely a catchy term to draw people to the post, by the way, to encourage men to stand up for Texas women. Many have responded very positively to this call, among many others, for additional support in the fight against SB1. I will continue to work on a crucial effort against this terrible bill. You know what? You have that right to work on this effort. But I'm certainly not going to stand with you. Because as far as I'm concerned, what you're doing is enabling children to be put to death and teaching a lack of responsibility. In fact, I'd like to point out to you that what I've said in the comments section of this article, and people know I don't hold back, what I said was, also, if you have counseled any women to have an abortion based on their getting pregnant through them having sex with you, then reality is that, like it or not, you're already a father. All you've done is just encourage someone, sadly the mother, to kill your children. Yeah, that is exactly how I see it. You don't become a mother or a father when the child passes through the birth canal. You become a mother or a father at the moment of conception. That's it. Well, this has certainly been a lot to talk about in this show. And we can still talk a little bit more if we want to. I think when we come back, I want to talk about some things that are coming up with deeper waters and such that, like, you ought to be paying attention to. And we'll just leave it at that. Of course, we're still available for your calls. 714-242-5180. We'll be back after this.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. That's www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
I can't believe the news today.
official Grok Radio mobile app. Listen to your favorite Grok Radio programs on your iPhone, iPad, iPod, Kindle Fire, Android smartphone, and tablet. The best thing is, it's absolutely free. Download it now from the iTunes or Google Play App Store, or get a link at our website, cyiworldwide.com. Grok Radio, Christian radio that doesn't suck.
And we are back. We have just a little under 20 minutes left in the show. My call-in number is 714-242-5180. We've been talking about this abortion bill today in this article that I've been critiquing of it. And I really hope that a lot of this has hit home and that many of you will be going to your churches and encouraging your pastors and your youth pastors to talk about this, and that many of you will be living appropriately as well. Now, there are some other things that are going on with deeper waters here. First off, I'd still like you all to be praying for our family, especially after the death of my grandmother-in-law. That's still being very hard on us. You know, I think things are being handled a lot better than I thought they would be, but there's still mourning going on. You know what? That's normal. That's okay. That happens. Just have to deal with it and it pass, and you have to remember, we mourn, but not like those who have no hope. We are people of hope. And just as Grandma Joy is gone, though, we are still people of joy. And her life was one of joy. And we can still have that joy. And I would say to my family that we are going to mourn for a while, but I mean, we must remember, she would not want us to mourn forever. There will always be an empty spot in our hearts, those of us who knew her, where she's there. Reality will always be lacking something in some way. But she would still want us to have joy in the end. Joy in the midst of a storm. And we should do that. Some of you have also noticed, it looks like, that I've done some writing against Matthew Ferguson at Adversus Apologetica, who seems to fall right in line with Richard Carrier and a lot of these others, in going with the works that scholarship really doesn't take too seriously, but, you know, does it really matter? And kind of immediately dismissive of any claim of a miraculous. And I suspect that some donations I came in recently have been because of this article, and people are looking, saying, I'm looking forward to seeing your response to this. See, he wrote up an article going against the minimal facts approach. I'm going to say not representing it well. For instance, he chose to go after Craig's view, but he included Habermas in it, saying they, now this is the approach used, and he used minimal facts that Habermas doesn't even use. And several people I was talking to about this article, many of us who were in the same field of study, were looking at him saying, he doesn't even get the basics right here. But it goes on anyway now. I wrote a long response to his post. I didn't respond to everything because, frankly, a lot of it didn't really matter to me. I mean, when he goes on and on about Joseph of Arimathea and showing why that isn't a fact, supposedly, and I was like, I don't care. Doesn't matter. Because I'm not here to defend that point. That is not one of the minimal facts. And so, what was said about Joseph of Arimathea, I pretty much ignored. Now, he's written a long response to me where he seems to have a lot to want to say about my reading comprehension and such. Strangely enough, as far as I see, he hasn't wanted to show up at Theology Web, where I've told him he can go to if he wants to really challenge me on this issue, but that offer was not taken. I find that very interesting. But one aspect I'd like to talk about with this is his criticism of miracles. This idea that because we live in an age of science, we can't accept a resurrection that would go against all the laws of physics that we know. This might sound like a shock to some people out there, but in ancient times, they buried dead people. They did. They really did. And, you know, one of the reasons they did it was because they knew they weren't coming back. Did they have to do a scientific experiment to establish this? No. And if you really think this is something that we have because of modern physics, then please show me where modern physics did an experiment to show dead people stay dead. How conclusive was this experiment? Who did it? And might I ask, who wasted our tax dollars doing that? Because most of us could have told them that without an experiment. We didn't need the experiment to know it. And you know what? That's why it's called a miracle. Because it happens outside the normal bounds of nature. A superhuman entity has acted in nature. And, you know, we're often told, well, will these Christians be just as willing to accept the miracles of Vespasian or Apollonius or anyone else? Tell you what I'll tell you then. If you can provide good evidence and a good case that other people did miracles, I will accept it. Seriously. Why should I be opposed to other people being able to do miracles? And heck, Jesus told the Pharisees that some of them cast out demons. And they were hardly on his good side. Why should I be surprised if there are other powers at work out there? Maybe God allows a miracle to be done somewhere to show his grace to people. Maybe demons are at work doing miracles to people to lead them astray. Who knows? But I don't have to close the door entirely and say, well, what about the claims of Mormonism? What about their miracles? Well, I discount Mormon miracles. You know why? Because I'm convinced Joseph Smith was a fraud. It's not because I've got a prior bias against miracles. It's because I've got a stance against Joseph Smith. I don't think you can trust anything the guy said. And for those who are more interested in that, in about a month's time, on August 17th, we'll be having Bill McKeever come on here to talk about Mormonism. I'm definitely looking forward to that show. And he says, well, in this follow-up post, he says, well, yeah, there's these miracles in Keno, but they're not grand miracles like the parting of a Red Sea and such. Really? That's your objection? You're not going to accept the miracles, not because they're where evidence, well, of course he says they're not evidenced well, but your main objection is they're not big enough. I don't care how big they are. A miracle is a miracle. In a good portion of Keener's works, the book Miracles, a good portion of them do have documentation. In fact, for those who are listening, you are very skeptical of Keener's work, he's going to be on my show August 3rd. Or August 10th, I mean. He's going to be on the August 10th. Call in and tell him how wrong he is, if you really think that. I welcome the opportunity to see you called in. Now, looking at some of these other points of age, we're usually told that the disciples had these hallucinations because they were grieving. And Paul had a hallucination because he was guilty. It was so convenient. Everyone just started having all these hallucinations at the same time. And, of course, none of them were smart enough to go to the tomb and look and say, geez, is his body still in there? And so many of them were willing to go around and claim that Jesus was physically risen. Most of us, if we have events we call hallucinations, we tend to realize them shortly afterwards and say, okay, and get on with our lives. Apparently, if you're a skeptic, that it's a separate event. And just mind, if there were hallucinations going on, it would not have been of a bodily Jesus. A hallucination that took place would probably see the Jesus' angel instead. Or they would see Jesus exalted to Abraham's bosom. You know, the disciples chose the hard route. If they'd gone around saying Jesus was the Messiah, yes, he's dead, yes, he was put to death, but God has exalted him despite his death. I don't think the Jews would have cared. I said, yeah, you're crazy, you're out there, you're wacky, but you know what, you go ahead and have your own say. And, you know, the other messianic movements, they all have this in common: when their leader died, they died. Christianity is the one exception. And like I said, they chose the hard route. In fact, they chose it in the very city where Jesus was put to death. Michael Patton, who was supposed to be on our show today, he wrote some recent meeting about Christianity as the most falsifiable religion. You know what? He's absolutely right. It is. If Christianity could be falsified, it would be the easiest religion to falsify. All you have to do is show the resurrection is false. We put our cards all out from the table. We went and said resurrection in the very city, in the very lifetime that these events happen, and went so far as to say bodily resurrection. You know, if you were willing to make a belief system to go out there and share with Gentiles who are Greeks and Romans, you would not say bodily resurrection. Why? Most of them view the body as a prison. It wasn't something you wanted to keep around. It wasn't something that you wanted to spend the rest of your life in. To be free from a body was seen as a good thing. Some other things you wouldn't invent: you would not claim your Messiah was crucified. And if he was crucified, you certainly wouldn't say he was crucified by being a traitor to Rome. Yet it's generally accepted among scholarship that Jesus was crucified because of claims that he made, or either was thought to have made or said to have made. You don't have to check Christian scholarship for that. You can check non-Christian scholarship. It's right there. A crucified Messiah was a shameful Messiah. And one that was guilty of treason against Rome, what you were essentially saying then when you became a Christian was, you see that man on the cross there? Yes. That man who is guilty of blasphemy against Yahweh? Yes. That man who's guilty of being a traitor to Rome? Yes. I'm staking my whole identity in that man. Talk about a way to get society to turn against you really quickly. Now, we're told sometimes where maybe some people could have seen this as a good heroic story and felt empathy for Jesus. Okay, let's go with the off chance, bizarre as it is, that could happen. You know what they do then? They say, good story, but I'm sure not signing on the dotted line becoming a Christian. They treat it just the same way we treat some like Aesop's fables and such today. And we can look and just realize that what Christianity did was totally contrary to the world around it. And yet Christianity survived. Not only survived, within a few centuries, it overcame the Roman Empire. And it did this without the use of a sword. Mormonism and Islam were both militaristic religions at the start. Joseph Smith had his own private army. Muhammad had his own armies. Jesus had fishermen. You notice that there are contrasts there? And Christianity survived and thrived when it had everything going against it. And a lot of these theories, they're theories accepted not in spot, not because of the evidence, but to explain away the evidence. Anything to avoid admitting Jesus rose from the dead, and since he rose from the dead, he is to be the Lord of my life. That's what's at stake here. That's what some people are resisting. You know, I'm looking over at this reply thing. There's not much to it. Am I going to write a reply? Yep. I've got several people that have already asked me, would you write a reply? Or, we're looking forward to your reply. Statements like that. I'm getting a lot of traffic at the blog because of this. And I think it's all great. And this back and forth, I think, it's doing a world of wonders. So, that's something else that's going on at Deeper Waters. Now, I haven't yet told what's going to be going on next week on our show. Next week on our show, we've got Jonathan Pennington coming on. You might not have heard of him. I believe he was a student of Richard Bauckham, but he wrote a book about reading the Gospels wisely. And we are going to be talking about that book with him. Because many of us, we don't really know how to read the Gospels. Now, when you're doing a minimum of facts approach, it's true. You go to Paul, okay? Go to the epistles, and that's fine. But that does not mean the Gospels are without value. The Gospels are extremely valuable if we want to know many of the final details about what Jesus' life was like and about what he taught. And yeah, you can still go there and defend the resurrection, of course. I still recommend the minimal facts approach, but you can go there and defend the resurrection. But we need to know how to read the Gospels where. See, for many of us, we don't really take the time to read the Gospels. We tend to jump straight to Paul. And N.T. Wright has talked about our Nicene Creed and how it says, born under the Virgin Mary, crucified under Pontius Pilate. And how he says he can picture Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the background listening to this and saying, we worked quite a bit on some of that stuff in the middle of those two, and we think it's pretty important. If we want to know about the kingdom of God, about the life of Jesus, about the miracles that he did, it's absolutely imperative that we learn how to read the Gospels. And we need to learn how to read them more than just in our own American vernacular, where we assume the biblical culture was just like ours. That's one of the worst mistakes we make. We need to read it in a way that we will be in touch with what the culture is saying and seeking to understand it. See, we have this idea that we should always go with a literal reading of Scripture. Never stop to ask, did the writers intend for us to do that? If they didn't, we could very well be missing what the writers meant for us to get from Scripture, and none of us want to do that. See, if you get an interpretation of Scripture wrong, you not only have a wrong interpretation, you miss out on the true interpretation. So, a lot of that's what's been going on here at Deeper Waters, and I encourage you to pray for us, support us, donate to us, help us keep you we're doing here. And I hope you'll take this information I'll share with you today and put it to good use. Well, it's that time here, so I think what I'm going to do is just go ahead and sign out. And I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. You know, same bat time, same bat channel. I really hope you'll come along for a ride. Now, I am Nick Peters of the Deeper Waters Podcast, signing off.